Hi, my name is Sean Taylor. That guy over there is my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. the objective geek of old-fashioned Yu-Gi-Oh! Fame. You go to the old Yu-Gi-Oh! Community, everybody knows who he is. Welcome to Avatar, the Last Podcasters. We're talking about... I still got to look at the titles, Chris. They're just... Meh. I got to look at the title every time. I don't remember what it's called. Today we're looking at the Awakening of Roku. The Awakening.
This one honestly might be the easiest one for me to remember because they kind of say it in the in the book.
Okay. I can't remember either the Kyoshi one or either of the Yangchun ones. I can remember Kyoshi's, but I don't know what order they come in. But I'm gonna guess it's Rise of Kyoshi, then Shadow of Kyoshi.
Yeah,
feels right.
But, and then there's the Dawn of Yangchen and the Legacy of Yangchen.
So the Dawn probably came first, I guess. Feels right. But yeah, and today we're going to talk about the Awakening of Roku, which came after the Pioneering of Roku, which is the title.
Reckoning.
That's what I said.
That one wasn't a good title. I don't think the Reckoning of Roku. Like, you guys are trying to do alliteration.
Reckoning is such a like, it's a word that I just associate with home, with rural southern Kansas. You reckon? Like, well, Roku did. I didn't. I didn't have any part of this reckoning.
That is his. You know, random thought I just had about what the heck is this in my pocket? That's weird. About, like, just the tension in some of the Kiyoshi novels that aren't felt here at all. Like, just the scene that she went into the fire, that she goes to the Fire Nation in the second book, and she goes to, like, the party or something, and she calls that person the Fire... She thinks one person's the Fire Lord, but actually it's not. And, like that had tension to it. That was just a dinner scene. Anyway, starting out way negative for some reason.
Chris, instead of starting off negative, let's just start off talking about the book, you know? Let's just jump right into the thing. How's that sound?
All right, so we're going to go somewhat in order, but we may jump around, so spoilers ahead. Or if you don't care, that's fine.
I think it's important that we're honest with you. We don't even know if this is going to be a one episode or a two episode thing. We're going to see where it takes us. So spoilers plenty here, and maybe more spoilers next week too. Also,
all right, we'll start with the first chapter. I won't say the chapter names. Actually, I won't. I don't know why I even said chapter. We'll just start with the first part because I did not do my notes by chapter. Prologue. This is honestly probably the most boring part. Dang it! I hate being negative.
Okay, but no, listen, this is spoilers, Chris, and if they go on this ride with us, you have to know that when you start reading this book, it comes out a little slow.
It does, and so the first chapter is a prologue, and it's like these two hunters who I don't know, they're hunting, and then they get attacked by this animal that shouldn't really be attacking them. I forgot what type of animal it was, maybe some, a seal otter. And it had rabies, essentially, and maybe not rabies, but actually...
It's pretty much rabies.
Pretty much.
They go crazy for a while, and then...
Rabies.
It goes crazy for a while, and then it dies.
It's also foamy?
That sounds like rabies to me, you know?
Yeah. Also, there was foaming at the mouth, too, right?
Foamy mouth guy, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. Rabies, yeah. There's also that. It's funny, it's just foamy mouth guy. Poor foamy mouth guy can't catch a break. He can only catch rabies.
And then at the end of the chapter, a waterbender comes up and, like, oh, that's like your hint at the bad guy. Like, ooh, like, oh, some, I forget what the person even said. But first chapter I thought was kind of meh. Not kind of meh, kind of just very boring.
Yeah, it's just
was pretty boring. Log.
It even the way the bad person proceeded just like, it was ominous, but then they also, like, introduced their name, and they're just like, nah, I'm not going to help. Like, it was clunky. Let's go there.
Yeah.
A little clunky.
Yeah, I think, granted, this is a YA novel, but I think you started off with that first one with just, like, mass chaos, maybe? Like to me, this is like, imagine, oh, you haven't seen Kingsman, have you?
Nope, but it's high on my list. I always forget, Chris, reminds that HBO?
Maybe.
I swear it's on my list because I believe there's some things if people tell me, I'm like, no, I'm not going to watch that. No, Kingsman, I actually think I'll enjoy it. I need to watch it.
You will enjoy Kingsman.
I believe you.
I am pretty confident. Since you don't care about spoilers, and this isn't, I mean, it's part of the big plot of it, but the bad guy is trying to make a machine that essentially turns people crazy and violent. Pretty much so much of this. But, like, there's a church scene where it's just chaos. It's just mass killing and destruction everywhere. So I think you maybe start off with that rather than, even if it's just animals or if it's even if it's more animals than just one, I think that might be a grabber. That might raise stakes more, like, oh, this thing is serious. It's not just like, oh, I fed one animal. So maybe that would have helped.
Yeah, if they showed it and it was just a hair farther along in this villain's story, essentially, like, yeah, in what they were doing, I can get on board with that.
Next story piece, Roku and Gyatso are at the air temples talking with Sister Disha, who used to be, I mean, they mentioned some last book, not this one. I think they might have mentioned it, that she used to be part of Avatar Kyoshi's Team Avatar. He talks about how
Do they allude to it? I feel like they allude to it. Now I can't remember.
Yeah. And essentially, Roku has to pass his airbending test, which I don't think they show in this. I think they just say he passed his test, which is, I guess, fine.
They don't talk about it. He just did it.
But do they say, like, oh, you're ready for your test? Like, he didn't.
The only thing they describe to it, I think, is when they're just comparing how long it took each of them.
Yeah.
Gyatso compared to Roku. I think that's really the only details we get.
Yeah. Okay. And, she dropped some more wisdom on him and stuff. I mean, I do like that Sister Disha is, like, kind of the ear in Roku's, kind of the voice in Roku's ear, like the good side of him. It's interesting to think that other nations gladly send their avatar to other nations to learn how they do stuff. Like, where did this, like, why does the Fire Nation agree to this? Because, you know, the Fire Nation is, like, even in times where Roku saw it to the Fire Lord, he's like, oh, like, forget that crap the airbenders taught you and stuff like that. Like, well, why did you send them there? I mean, I know you do want him to be a fully realized avatar, because then, yeah, I guess it just comes with the territory. I'm like, well, you gotta take the teachings with the abilities.
Yeah, I guess maybe back at this point where they're not actively at war and stuff, it does make a little more sense, I suppose.
Yeah. It's not a plot problem or anything like that. It's just like me thinking out loud to myself, like, oh, what, like, why do other nations are like, oh, hey, go learn.
It would be
go
easy.
Learn from these other people how they're.
It would be easy to imagine both, like, the Fire Nation and a well organized Earth Nation be like, nah, you don't need that. You just stay here.
Yeah. Well, that's what they did with, you know, Korra didn't travel and learn the, that's part of her character. She didn't travel and learn, like, the lessons and teachings necessarily of all these other nations. She kind of just learned the bending of it. It's actually really interesting.
Took it in-house.
Yeah. Granted, I could see.
That's why, like, Korra's worse, Chris. She's homeschooled. I'm joking.
I mean, I have brought up that, like, that's part of Korra's arc, and that's part of her imperfection, is that unlike Aang and other past avatars, she didn't travel the world. She didn't gain that empathy from traveling the world and seeing people from different lives, walks, stuff. She only trained to be a superhero her whole life. And, you know, she thought she was, because she was trained to be invincible, she thought she was invincible, and so she had to work through that. But, anywho. Yeah, not much else. Any call-outs from the conversations with, like, Sister Disha or anything like that?
Some of the hamminess of the dialogue showed through pretty early for me, I felt.
Mm-hmm. This is where I got lost for a minute. I came back later. We started getting, and we can have a conversation about this. Tamine, how did you think about Tamine as a spy?
That is a plot convenience. It is not a plot hole. It is a plot convenience to make a thing work that doesn't just fit super organically. That's all.
Now, I was annoyed by this at first. About Tamine being... Well, I'm still annoyed about a couple different things. Like,
I'm kind of glad you said that. I was like, just at first? Like, only at first you were...
There are some scenes where she's, like, scaling the side of a building or something. Like, whoa, what the heck? Like, what's going on here? Why is she doing... I understand being an emissary and being like, oh, maybe I'll get some information out of this person. But you're a full-fledged spy. But the more I thought about
it... apparently this, a top-notch one.
Yeah, top-notch spy.
Yep.
She can influence and anybody to do stuff for her, mm-hmm. even if they're just like lowly cooks and stuff.
With
like,
everything to lose, including their lives, Chris. That bugged me. It's like that. Why would that cook would never? Nothing, no, you're dead.
That was a pretty big plot convenience. Happened earlier in the book. So I keep thinking in my head, like, all right, when does this plot convenience happen? Look, it's that big of a deal. And that is a big, that one, saying Tamine is a spy is a plot convenience. And then being like, oh, she convinced his workers and stuff to like be work for him. Like, you're a work for the Fire Nation. What do these people gain from you? It's not like you're doing them favors. Like, this is all risk, no reward for them.
Nope, nothing in it for them at all. Nada. But
they snuck you into the like.
That is one of
like,
the
this
more,
is their job.
Yeah, that's one of the more difficult parts of this book. Period is that's the whole subplot, the all of the subplot revolving around that, and you know that relationship with what's his name,
Sozin.
Thank you. Sorry, it's just that he's so convincing in this book. I'll get to it when we get to it. Never mind.
Let me wrap up the timing.
Yeah, so no, I'm just
I was
getting off the rails.
We'll get back to it, though, I'm sure. I was, at first reading the book, I was like, every time her chapters came up, I'm like, this is dumb. This is such a plot convenience. Like, this is not like the character we met in that episode, right? So that's where my head went to. And then I started thinking, okay, let's look at Katara. Let's look at Katara and Legend of Korra. Say if Legend of Korra came first, and all we got from Katara was this old lady Katara, right? Like, she's wise and stuff. And then we get to Katara in Avatar. And then she was doing all this stuff. Would I be like, I don't know if I'm buying it or not and stuff like that. Would I be like, oh, she's now the best waterbender ever?
It's one of those things where it's like there's enough vagueness where you're not like, you're not just completely anti or you know you can't be because it's just like enough sort of arbitrary gray area.
Yeah.
But it still kind of sucks.
That's not a perfect comparison, but I was thinking about that. So that allowed me a little more grace to the timing and stuff. I still the convincing random worker stuff. That's still crazy.
Yeah.
To me. It doesn't make a sense.
Or just like it made it even feel like skeleton, she was down there holding her breath for a really long time. I was like, are you sure she didn't die?
Yeah, even the scaling, the side of the wall, I was like, this is nuts. Like, I wasn't buying that part of it still either. And then the escaping, anyway, we'll get to
there's
that.
No, because there's no evidence to suggest to us yet that she should be able to do that. There's nothing.
True. Like, if they had dropped in some stuff like, oh, Roku, like, you know, you sparred with Sozin a couple times. Like, oh, like, but those times we sparred, like, you didn't beat me, though.
Yeah, but like anything would have helped, and there was nothing.
She just, yeah. All right, Ching gets a mission from one of her handlers. I forgot her name, Dallas A, I guess. Yeah, from Dallas A.
Yes. Who I kind of forget why is important, like. I know that Dallas A is important, but I forget why.
Yeah, she was in the other book. She was the one who like was really good with like a rope chain thing.
She's a non-bender, right?
Yeah. Not so she's really smart, apparently. But okay. Oh crap, I went down to three things. Okay. So they first go to the Four Nations. Fire Nation, that's what I meant to say. Next thing up, Roku and Gatsu go to the Fire Nation. They think they're going to go speak to Sozin, but instead of talking to the Fire Lord, the Fire Lord brings up Roku's clan's financial troubles, which that never comes back around again. I don't know why they brought it up, to be honest.
Nope, it's pointless. Let me save you the mental strain of wondering.
I was like, oh, this is going to be a plot point.
I was too. Like, I was like, oh, I wonder. But I was already skeptical. Even as I was reading, it was like, oh, that's going to be kind of a stupid thing, I bet. And then it wasn't even a stupid thing. It was nothing.
He also brings, the Fire Lord also brings up Northern Water Tribe disrupting trade ships and stuff, which I don't think that really came into play at the end.
Not really, maybe just as like indirect political information feeds the story, I suppose.
I would say I didn't the thing I liked most about that scene was the like power dynamic of like the Fire Lord being like kind of coming down on Roku, being like, ah, you're no Zeto and whatever. So like that part was kind of interesting, but
yeah. It's a weird relationship that's not, it's not smooth, or it feels inconsistent, and yet I didn't mind it. That's one of the things that maybe I didn't mind about this whole story, was like, they did a good enough job of making, what is Sozin's dad name? I can't think of it.
Taizo?
They did a good enough job of making him a pretty convincing a-hole. They're like, okay, yeah, I can see why you raised a jerk son, you know.
And apparently he wasn't, like, that strong of a firebender either, so he's probably overcompensating.
Yeah, probably.
All right, so they... Roku leaving Air Temple with Gatsu. Okay. Roku and Gatsu will get the Fire Nation, and they're on their way to the Northern Water Tribe. The next chapter, I believe, is about Prince Sozin. So again, you know, things are going, you know, a whole bunch of different POVs. Prince Sozin talking to his dad, and pretty much his dad just gives him bad advice. There's not much there, except you see the dynamic between Sozin and his father.
Yep, no comment. It introduces the dynamic well. It's fine enough for what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Roku and Gatsu, they're traveling to Northern Water Tribe. They stop at the little outpost village. The reasoning, because the bison's tired, and like, all right, we'll stop over here. They talk to some rural... Sounds weird to say rural in the sense of, like, the North Pole. but pretty
about
much.
As rural as it gets.
They talk to a bunch of them, and they talk to them about how the going-ons and the happenings and of the culture and stuff, how the capital of Northern Wild Tribe has been given more emphasis by the chief, and he's kind of just been forgetting about those outer skirt villages and stuff, talking about the dynamics of there, the unfairness. They bring up how disease stuff from Earth Kingdom, they didn't help out there, stuff like that. They pretty much are hoarding medicines and stuff.
A-holes? No.
But honestly, they...
This is actually the part of the end game plot that I did like, though, in a general way. Again, maybe not for a big Avatar story, but I like this as like a political development for this point in time.
Yeah. And then we're introduced to Akka Gipser. Akka is the main antagonist, or really the only antagonist. Yeah, she's the only antagonist.
I mean,
it's even hard to call some.
Yeah, I was going to say it depends on how you feel about the Northern Water Tribe
people. Yeah, but to me, and that sounds weird. What I'm about to say might sound like a big city guy. But even the chief was like, I mean, we didn't forget about it. It's just like, how am I supposed to hand out this medicine to, like, they're welcome to come here, but, like, you know, the stuff ain't free. I mean, still not fair and stuff. But they weren't antagonists. Like, even Roku was like, oh, I got along with the chief. So clearly they weren't that antagonist.
Yeah, like I said, as far as general political turmoil, like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
I can see this being a case at this point in Avatar universe history. That's not horribly hard to imagine.
Yeah. So we're introduced to Akka, and she sneaks into Roku's and Gyatso's camp, and she's like, oh, I could kill him, but what would happen and stuff. So that part is kind of...
She thinks about the Avatar maybe. State. I think that's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I could die. That's good. Yeah. That's good thinking.
And then she decides, like, oh, I'll follow them. And so that part, this particular plan, I'm not understanding or get. She's like, okay, well, I'll send out stuff to them, and I'll see how they react to it. Like, is that really helping your research to this disease that you're giving?
No, I think this was just a way of manufacturing that kind of clear and present danger that we've discussed. Like, I think that's all. I think that's all it is.
So anyway, introduce the Akka.
She's mysterious enough. Like, she had my interest in, like, oh, you know, I wonder what the backstory here is. Way, at least.
Yeah, I was really. Oh, like
I thought she was going to have more of a connection. I thought there was going to be an actual, like, I get, you know, there's going to be, but, like, okay, spoiler alert, there's not. She's just angry person with her backstory, which fine, she can, but not really a connection.
Yeah,
just a mad person with a backstory.
Next up, Roku has a vision of fighting a spirit with Avatar Quirk. And that's left purposely mysterious. Like, they're fighting a spirit and stuff. I don't mind that. I don't mind Quirk being here.
No, I think it's a neat way to, for a not super spiritual Avatar to, like, have trouble connecting or to represent trouble connecting to a previous life. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I do like getting Korok's perspective and here, because he is the Avatar who failed probably, wouldn't say the most, but he failed
most people.
Yeah,
as a, like, cause
he definitely has
as a whole, like, you know, he didn't. He probably wasn't even horribly useful to the water tribe, and he wasn't around long enough to be that anyway, you know?
Yeah. So, I do enjoy getting more pork in here. Yeah. Then, Roku snapped out of... I believe he snapped out of the vision, because him and Gyatso are attacked by a wild animal. I don't remember what it is. Oh, I think it might have been a polar bear dog.
Yes, that maybe sounds right.
Bear dog. Okay. And they are saved by Makituk. That's how I'm going to pronounce it. Did you pronounce it any different way?
Makituk, yeah. Is that, I feel like that's what you said, right?
Makituk? Or did you say Makatuk?
I said Makituk, but with, like, instead of a tuk, okay, I did a tuk. I don't know. I mean, we're close, you know?
Yeah.
We're close to each other, maybe not close to right.
Yeah. I did look up what her name means, and it means stand, and they do mention that she feels like she's standing in both worlds often, so I believe that's where they derive that name from.
Okay. That fits.
Akka, Akka means guardian, which when I looked that up halfway through the book, I was like, oh, is she, like, I don't know, maybe part of a spirit or something, because Kirk mentioned that the spirit they were fighting, this is later in the book, like, oh, it was a guardian spirit, like, that was corrupted. And clearly this thing is connected to, I thought she was connected to, like, a broken, or a guardian, maybe that specific guardian spirit or something. And so she wasn't. But I feel like they were setting that up. Don't use the same word.
Just to mess with you. Yeah, absolutely. I didn't
connecting dots that aren't there.
I was gonna say I didn't think that hard about it or look that hard. I was just like, that's a name, and then I tried my best to pronounce it without causing offense to people. There's not that I'm pronouncing it out loud to people. I just want to be respectful, even in my own head, you know.
So they're saved by Makituk. She was there before, or the village or whatever. And then she ends up joining them. She says, I've got nothing better to do. And that, honestly, I think it's bad writing.
Yeah, like, feels characterless.
Like, why is this character joining them? Like, I get that she was like, oh, I'm going to, you know, at some point she's like, I go find my tribe. But I didn't connect her finding a tribe to her trying to join this team or go with them. To me, those two... You could maybe make the connection, but to me, it wasn't connecting here, or wasn't as impactful here. So she just like, yeah, I'll join. I don't know you two, but I'll join you.
It felt, I would have liked, again, maybe some description throughout this previous of, you know, the mysterious figure in the corner kept looking at us and is like, I don't know, make her interesting. Before this,
yeah, or have her
moment,
yeah, or have her engage with them when she's still that shrouded person of like trying to read them or something, or see or take some interest in them.
Yeah, and maybe right? And so it can even be sketchy right out of the gate, right? Because they kind of try to present her as a maybe not all the way trustworthy figure, or at least that you're not supposed to be sure. Okay, that's fine. Hit that on the head right away.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Yep. Yeah. So she joins their group. You got anything else to talk about there? I now feel like I'm moving fast, but probably not.
Honestly. No, no, I think you're moving at a fine rate.
Okay.
You're crushing it.
Next up is the Fire Nation royal family. You have a dinner together. I didn't mind this scene. I think I like the scene. It was there's tension in the scene. You can see what everyone, I think, wants in the scene. Like, you know, Sozin. Oh, you learned in the previous scene that Fire Lord Taizu probably has Alzheimer's, if I had to guess.
Or, you know, like Parkinson's, or, you know, Sundowners or something, where he is Maybe just dementia. Maybe we're softening it too much.
Yeah.
Something.
But he's clearly he's going to step back and stuff, look at some healers and things like that. So I did have the moment where Sozin's like, I'm ready. His dad is like, for what? And then his dad realizes what he's talking about. He's like, you think you're ready for this? No.
I like that is that here where you get to see the sister make a mistake as well?
Yeah.
Like that, we feel some sibling rivalry. We feel that in the dad's time of difficulty that is not happy with either of his kids. This is one of the positives of the book that I think they do a good job of making this relationship feel janky in a way that would mess with Sozin. Yeah.
Sozin definitely has an insecurity problem. And you can see that subtly. This is, I think, good writing. Because anytime height is brought up, like, he's like, oh, he looked up to her, like, disappointed, but you can tell he has either a Napoleon complex or he has other insecurities as well, whereas being from his father not liking anything from him, and also you can see he likes to feel superior to other people, so even when people are taller than him. Like, when he was introduced, he runs a meeting later, and it's like the tall woman stands up, and Roku and Sozin is like annoyed, like just even at her talking and also at her height.
They're painting these little microaggressions throughout the entire book against Sozin. Good.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yes. Yeah, I do think, like you said, I do think he does a good job of establishing that relationship between Sozin and his father. That was only briefly mentioned in the previous one.
I mean, I think in the previous one, you just barely get the idea. It's like, yeah, it's probably not great, but...
Yeah. Next up, Maki Tok, I think, tries to either teach Roku waterbending or try to teach him just how to go into the spirit world. I might be jumping around a little bit. I think she kind of tries to teach him waterbending.
I think the waterbending's first. Like,
yeah, which always, anytime I'm a sucker for teaching people about elements, so anytime you get into that type of stuff, I'm kind of all ears. I'm like, oh yeah, what do you think about the elements and what it means to really bend this element and stuff? Does he water bend here? I can't remember if he does or not. I don't think he does.
I don't think so. I think it follows the ground.
Yeah, she says, we'll keep working on your waterbending, so you're not completely useless out there. Oh, they share some tea and stuff and talk. All right. Netsa, we back to Tamin doing her spycraft and stuff. There's just so many freaking pocket beans there. She convinces the staff to put her in this little heater thing that's right below the floor and don't turn on the heater thing. And she purposely put this, and she's overhearing this conversation between ministers of peace from Omashu and Basing Se. I find that interesting. And you know, it's always been an interesting thing. Like, there is a King Bumi, and there is a King of Omashu, and there's a King of the entire Earth Kingdom. What's up with that? And so I like that little bit of like conversations around that dynamic.
Yeah, but even the payoff here at the end of the book, the payoff for what we hear from this plan isn't super explanatory to the why, right? Like, I know we kind of get we don't get a satisfying reason for this plan.
The plan is honestly the dumbest part of this book, it might be.
I could believe that. So,
the Earth King, the Earth, the The Ba Sing Se Minister of Peace is working with the Omashu Minister of Peace to destroy parts of Omashu?
Yeah.
Right? Is that what their plan
Something
is?
Like that. Oh,
there was never a why and what does... And one thing...
We think...
It's all Earth Kingdom.
We think it's to get the acting leader of Omashu out, is what you're supposed to imply. Something or other to get that person dethroned or away, and that's alluded to by Taizo later when he's talking about like the devil you do know versus the devil you don't. But it just doesn't. It still isn't very good at explaining why. This is your best idea is to kill a bunch of people and hope that that makes the person
in your own country.
In your own.
And also, why did the why was the Minister of Omashu down for it? Was he going to take the place? No, I don't think he's...
I don't even
know.
Like, I mean, it might have said it, but if it did, it was too boring.
For the big plot that's driving this whole story to be some weird scheme between two characters that we see talk twice, that we have no idea what their motivations are, what their why is, that's to me is a terrible writing.
It left me wondering, like, are you sure that's what you want to do? Which I don't think is a good thing to be wondering at this stage.
Yeah. It would be bad enough if the ministers were plotting to assassinate some official or noble, but poisoning the entire city? It was genocide, and to what end? Yeah, Tommy, to what end? I mean, she wasn't saying that was the narration, but yeah. To what end, indeed? All right. Back with Roku, and Roku's back with Kurok fighting some wolf snake spirit thing that used to be a guardian spirit but became corrupted, so Kurok mentions that to him. I don't think they end that part with Roku in the mouth of the giant spirit. And then Roku and Gato talk about how they were instrumental in stopping some plague spreading with the air ladies, sisters. Not much there. That was just a lot of exposition. They're like, oh yeah, we stopped it this way. I guess that was just a setup that they know. Honestly, I don't think you needed that part about them knowing how working with that.
Agreed.
It wasn't like that many. I think it might have been like a page. I don't think it helped any.
Yeah.
The big help was Baki Tuck at the end. Like that. I don't need to.
That was
you knowing how to stop legs.
Utility.
I helped this situation.
They also. Yeah, they made it sound like that's a way bigger part of Avatar's regular duties than I want it to be.
Okay. And then Akka has another chapter. I don't know why she has a chapter, honestly. I don't even know what she even says. Oh, this chapter is not even a whole page. I guess it is technically probably 1.1 page. I don't know what she was even doing. Anyway, I think she was just talking about just tagging along with the Avatar has proved useful. She sent he handled the caribou bear and something. I guess she's just working on her poison, whatever. Talking, that's up, talking to team. They start getting Team Avatar. I'm just saying Team Avatar starts getting attacked by wolves. They honestly could have moved some of these chapters around. Didn't have to end on a cliffhanger of them being back to back against wolves. Could have just put those two chapters together.
That's a good thing, which is weird. Maybe if the chapters were longer than like 2 pages, and you wanted to like, oh well, people read a couple chapters a night. It's like, no, that's a 2-page-long chapter. You're being unnecessarily dramatic right now.
You could have put Because it goes Aka chapter, Team Avatar chapter, Sozin chapter, back to Team Avatar chapter. Just move that Team Avatar after Roku, that first one, after this, I'm sorry, after the Sozin one, and we didn't have to leave on a weird cliffhanger. Anyway, they're about to be attacked by Arctic Wolves. Then we're back to Sozin. Sozin talked to his dad about the plot to kill the Yamashu people. Like you said, his dad alluded to why the real reasoning might be. His dad tells him to do one thing, but Sozin wants to do another thing, and then his dad forgets what he told him to do, and Sozin decides not to tell him anyway, and Sozin's going to do what Sozin wants to do. Because his dad wanted to go tell the Earth Queen to get favor with the Earth Queen and stuff, which is good. Also, it will save a lot. I mean, I know he's not worried, but that's the more right thing to do. And Sozin wants to do nothing and let them kill each other.
Which, this is the part where I say it's at least inconsistent, because I think Sozin has a point when he expects his dad to be on his side. You know, the whole never so weakness. And they try to brush it up again with the, again, the devil you do know, you know, we know what to expect from that leader there. But, like, I completely understood why Sozin was like, I have to arrive at this answer. I think I've got it. I got to go impress my dad. I think it's weird to have Sozin have so much conviction in this answer, and then dad be so convicted in the opposite.
Yeah. I wonder if his dad would have just said the opposite thing no matter what Sozin would have said.
That is,
I just found out that might have been, I thought that were they were going with it. And I kind of thought that would have been interesting, because that would have pissed Sozin off. Like he's not trying to teach me anything. Like, everything in my freaking life, you're bad and he's good. Like,
that's it.
Yeah. Like, no matter, like, there's no right or wrong. There's just the Fire Lord's judgment. And, like, that's kind of an interesting thought of, like, you know what, Dad? Thank you for that lesson. I, as Fire Lord, am above whatever right or... And I think he actually mentioned... He might mention something
about that. That would lend itself well to future Fire Lord stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Fire Lord stuff.
Genocide.
casual.
I don't think anyone's seen it.
Has anyone ever said genocide with like a happy little up and down tone in their voice? Well, I'm sure some people have. We don't talk about those people, though. That's for sure.
Jeez. I'm glad there's a little voice in my head that says stuff before I say stuff.
That's good. That's good. You keep that voice. Hang on to him. Or her. Whichever.
I think it's just me. Just a little me. With like a big chibi head. Then they're like, hey, how about this?
And the other one on the other show is like, no, how about this?
All right. Water it. Yeah, so the daughter's dad, whatever. All right, back to the fight versus 100 wolves, or 50 wolves or so. You got anything to say about that part while I drink this water?
No, but I will say, so we're at about 45 minutes here, so I'll say this is about the point where I think we'll get to a good stopping point, a good crux in after we chat about the wolf fight, maybe. And then we'll stop and cut and do a second episode. Does that sound all right?
Sounds fine to me.
Excellent. I got thoughts about the fight specifically, but not the lead up.
Okay.
I like the fight. Good. I was like, hey, this feels like a natural development. Wolfpack, Middle Arctic, still weird bad guy trailing stuff. But a natural development as far as like a team building exercise for the good guys. It was a fine fight. I was fine with it.
I do think this might be the best fight in it. It was very easy to imagine, and also to imagine the not only the stakes of the fight, but like the danger of the fight. Like, all right, you got like one polar bear dog, whatever, but you got like 50 or so ravaged wolves, and it's like, oh, we might die. Oh, my, no, they're not going to kill off.
They can't die, Chris. You know how I know?
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It painted a nice picture. Well, not nice, but the writing painted a good, clear, vivid picture of the fight. I had trouble picturing it.
Yeah. So fight ends. I forget how they defeat all the wolves exactly. It's weird to say I tell it's a good fight, but I forget how they defeat
the wolves. They're holding them off, and then they kind of break rank essentially, and that messes up the wolves and messes with the wolves' circle attack MO, and they get them that way. Mm-hmm. And then they trap a bunch of them in an ice prison, which sounds horrible.
Even though I didn't remember how they finished, I remember reading it and being like, "Cool, I'm going with it. Completely good with this fight.
I'm completely good with the trapping of dogs in this ice prison because I'm the good guy." Yeah. No, listen, in the moment, I get it. It was better than killing them outright. That was the right thing in the moment.
They're going to die anyway.
Yeah, they're going down regardless.
So I would just kill them.
They wanted to learn something and make those deaths not for nothing. They wanted to learn something for them.
Oh yeah, that's true. They did. That's right. They did need to freeze them so they can observe them.
To study them. So they tried to make them not valueless.
And then apparently Maki Tuck broke rank, which was suspicious. Apparently. To Gyatso, Gyatso got bit in the leg.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that fight ends.
And yeah, is that a good stop spot?
Sure, we're at 108.
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, feels like we're farther in than that, but we're coming up on the part that we both discussed as the turning point. Right? Oh, no. Chris just froze up.
What's next?
Yeah, what is next?
Roku needing to go into the spirit world and stuff like that. Am I still frozen up? I can hear you.
Oh, no, you're there. I want to get closer to the part where we both felt there was a vivid turning point, I think. Right? That feels like a natural split.
Pretty much him and Roku and Makita talk about Gyatso because she heals him. They still need to rest. And Roku talks about how Gyatso is like kind of untrusting because of what happened with Layla, stuff like that. So that's why he doesn't trust her. But when he does start to trust, Roku also mentioned that Gyatso didn't trust him at first. And they're best friends now, which is true, which is why... I think that also helped out this relationship and stuff.
It made Roku persistent in his trust. Yeah. Even though his character flaws were being too trusting.
Yeah. And then we get into... Oh, Tamin breaking into the building. Oh, Tamin gets word back. Well, I didn't mention this before. Tamin learns the plot, the devilish plot of the whole book to kill Citizens of the Mashu. She sends that stuff to Sozin. Sozin then tells his people to tell Tamin to, hey, do nothing. We ain't gonna do nothing about it. It is what it is. That's Earth Kingdom business. That don't involve us. And then she's like, no, I need to go tell Earth Queen and whoever, and I need evidence. So she breaks into that minister's place to find the evidence. She ends up finding the rock, I don't know how she know what it is. Oh, I think he mentions The Rock. I think she overhears them mention The Rock. But one thing, also, if I'm that guy, like, why didn't I just kill her when I knew she was in the fire thing in the first... Anyway, that's a plot convenience. But it's not like... Or why did I just capture her then? Why did I let her go tell parts of my plan to other people?
It feels like a loose end that should have been tied up.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion.
And I knew she... Why am I speaking freely when I... Like, he could have... What I thought might have happened, because I thought he was a smart villain, is like, he knows she's underneath there, so he's feeding her bad information. And that's okay. Not what happened. He was feeding her the right information, the correct
information. I like what you're saying better.
And then later, she gets captured. But she does hide The Rock. Wait, she hides The Rock? And he's never like, hey, where's The Rock at? Anyway, she ends up hiding The Rock.
Yeah, I actually don't know if that comes back for a minute until the very, very end.
I don't think they might have wrote that she hid The Rock.
Maybe, question mark.
Still, to me, if I'm him, I'm like, I had a rock here.
This was a big, well, it wasn't a literal big rock. It's a big deal. It wasn't a big rock, but it's a big deal.
Yeah. He's like, she's here. Why did... But where's The Rock? But he never said, search my room for The Rock.
Not once.
He would have just found it.
Yep. Afraid so.
He was like, I'll just get some more rocks. It's okay. All right. And then that's where we'll end that at.
I'll just get some more rocks.
That makes the plot sound too simplistic, but...
No, I think you knocked it out of the park. That's the whole... I'll just get some more rocks. I don't know why that cracks me up here. Yeah, come back next time. Listen, it does get better, and I have no issue saying that whatsoever. Gets better. So come on back. You know, we'll talk next time. And in the interim, my name's Sean. That's my friend Chris Ford, aka the Objective Geek of Yu-Gi-Oh! Fame in this Avatar The Last Podcasters. And I'll put all the stuff in the description just like I always do. And we appreciate all of your positive interactions that you can do. Positive reviews, comments, likes, thumbs up, bells, subscriptions, whistles, etc. We are grateful for those, and thank you. We'll see you next time.